Vice President Jesse Sharkey, who informed us
Blog that... Blog Talk Radio.
You think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Chris, shrinking? Nah, I just don't brag about the deals I've been inking. Honorary degrees from Lincoln. I cross borders like those sheikas and do albums in a weekend. I'm hip-hop speaking, never the weakling. I'm the truth, man, so what are y'all speaking? Them lies and them liars, I still make flyers. I still ride bands and say MC for hire. I'll spit the fire anywhere, any place. Mama never told you to stay out of grown folk face. Then you got them rappers with that cold broke face. They torn around the world, then they going no place. My KRS-One moves at its own pace. On vegetable oil, no gas, no waste. Then you got these intellectuals, really they're sexual, but they wanna remain respectable. Stop frying.
Do you think
they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Thinking me, I say impeccable, running circles around these intellectuals. What a spectacle. They get mad when I say I and God are identical. You better get on your knees and praise them. These conspiracy theory rappers, I blaze them too. Ooh, deja vu. You seen this all before me, slaying your crew. I'm known by all the kids. I studied Dr. King, man, and all he did. People don't stop calling Christopher Gibbs. Cause when I'm on the mic, man, I flip they lid. Me getting bullshit. I can't even count all the dough this month I did. From coast to coast, we roasting toast. I'm hot. Me and the ice can't get close.
Do
you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? There'll be many of you now. Do you really think they're ready for you now? Real revolutionaries know the game. We take away the pain like Novocaine. Knowledge reigning supreme, you know the name. This the name that don't play all them games. I ain't gonna call no names or take away no fame. But the airwaves is a shame. And the public don't know who to blame. So they blame rappers like we're insane. Like we are to blame for society's pain. Like they don't know for sure what's in our brains. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Same style oppression, socially rearranged. Many of our problems we already overcame. But we stuck in the past, can't see the change. Stuck in the Hyundai, can't see the range. Stuck in the towers, can't see the planes.
Do
you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now? Do you think they really ready for you now? Do you think that there'll be many of you now? Do you really think they ready for you now?
Marvin didn't try to be magic or charismatic and all that. He just was. Even when he sung the national anthem, I mean, it was Marvin Gaye. You know, it was just unique. It was special.
Can you see
man you're about to see and hear, should you be so foolish as to have just joined us, is Ray Charles.
Hello. All right. 3, 4.
I got something, y'all, in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing along. Every voice and sing, till I didn't ever ring with the harmony. Oh, let our rejoices run high. Love has your sea.
Something like this.
Oh, beautiful.
about America, sweet America.
Good evening. Today, our fellow citizens, our way of life, our very freedom came under attack in a series of deliberate and deadly terrorist acts. The victims were in airplanes or in their offices, secretaries, businessmen and women, military and federal workers, moms and dads, friends and neighbors. Thousands of lives were suddenly ended by evil, despicable acts of terror. The pictures of airplanes flying into buildings, fires burning, huge structures collapsing, have filled us with disbelief, terrible sadness, and a quiet, unyielding anger. These acts of mass murder were intended to frighten our nation into chaos and retreat. But they have failed. Our country is strong. A great people has been moved to defend a great nation. Terrorist attacks can shake the foundations of our biggest buildings, but they cannot touch the foundation of America. These acts shatter steel, but they cannot dent the steel of American resolve. America was targeted for attack because we're the brightest beacon for freedom and opportunity in the world, and no one will keep that light from shining. Today, our nation saw evil, the very worst of human nature, and we responded with the best of America, with the daring of our rescue workers, with the caring for strangers and neighbors who came to give blood and help in any way they could. Immediately following the first attack, I implemented our government's emergency response plans. Our military is powerful, and it's prepared. Our emergency teams are working in New York City and Washington, D.C. to help with local rescue efforts. Our first priority is to get help to those who have been injured and to take every precaution to protect our citizens at home and around the world from further attacks. The functions of our government continue without interruption. Federal agencies in Washington, which had to be evacuated today, are reopening for essential personnel tonight and will be open for business tomorrow. Our financial institutions remain strong, and the American economy will be open for business as well. The search is underway for those who are behind these evil acts. I've directed the full resources of our intelligence and law enforcement communities to find those responsible and to bring them to justice. We will make no distinction between the terrorist who committed these acts and those who harbor them. I appreciate so very much the members of Congress who have joined me in strongly condemning these attacks. And on behalf of the American people, I thank the many world leaders who have called to offer their condolences and assistance. America and our friends and allies join with all those who want peace and security in the world. And we stand together to win the war against terrorism. Tonight I ask for your prayers for all those who grieve, for the children whose worlds have been shattered, for all whose sense of safety and security has been threatened. And I pray they will be comforted by a power greater than any of us, spoken through the ages in Psalm 23. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me. This is a day when all Americans from every walk of life unite in our resolve for justice and peace. America has stood down enemies before, and we will do so this time. None of us will ever forget this day, yet we go forward to defend freedom and all that is good and just in our world. Thank you. Good night, and God bless America.
Human League's Underground Radio Network, I figured that I'd take a moment of silence for the tragic victims of 9/11. And so I felt that right at this time, I figured that we should also give a moment of silence. So I would give a moment of silence to all those who lost their lives. All right. After that moment of silence, everybody, let's show the world what America did. I guess we bounce back.
Proverbs chapter 24, verse 16. For a just man falleth seven times, and he rises up again. I fell short last night, but it's a new day. And for so long I was in a backslidden state. It's been times that I felt dead, I fell from grace. But since I'm still alive, I can repent today. Call on Yahweh to wipe my torment away. The love of God just makes me lament away. Come and see how he stuck, new mercies every day. I've been through dark nights, but made it to them sunny days. I lost my mother and that was a devastating blow. It knocked the wind out me, I ain't wanna fight no more. I felt a fornication, porn and masturbation. Stagnant in my spirit, couldn't see elevation. We all sin, yeah, we fall short. But I'm bouncing back like a basketball on the court. We have to treat this walk as if it is a sport. Play the game by the rules, try not to fall no more.
Nothing can stop my shine, Lord knows I ain't lying. The world says a just man falls seven times. I done bounce back, Jesus made me bounce back. Nothing can stop my shine, Lord knows I ain't lying. The world says a just man falls seven times. I done bounce back, Jesus made me bounce back.
I was like a pig that was all washed up, clean as a whistle, back to wallow in the mud. I was like a dog that just threw up and ran back to it just to lap it up. Almost apostate, abandonment of faith, just because some things wasn't working out my way. I went on my runs like the prodigal son, but back to my father's arms I would have to run. He showed me true love, my father embraced me, when the average person probably would have hated me. After I turned my back and did my own thing, he still accepted me back and made my heart change. Then he purged me with hyssop, then made me get up. I was dark in my heart, but my inner man lit up. Man, what was I thinking? In my sin I was sinking. I didn't profit nothing from all this flesh freezing.
Nothing can stop my shine, Lord knows I ain't lying. The world says a just man falls seven times. I done bounce back, Jesus made me bounce back. Nothing can stop my shine, Lord knows I ain't lying. The world says a just man falls seven times. I done bounce back, Jesus made me bounce back.
Greater is he that is in me, man. He that's in the world, boy. Saved by grace through faith, I'm not confined to this world, boy. Satan thought he had me. Daddy ain't raised no sucker. Persevering through struggle, the suffer has made me tougher.
turn into something. To everyone that wrote me off, God stay with me. If Christ be for me, tell me who can be against me.
Nothing can stop my shine, Lord knows I ain't lying. The world says a death man fall 7 times. I done bounce back, Jesus made me bounce back. I done bounce back, Jesus made me bounce back. Nothing can stop my shine, Lord knows I ain't lying. The world says a death man fall 7 times. I done bounce back, Jesus made me bounce back. I done bounce back, Jesus made me bounce back.
In no way am I trying to encourage somebody that's sinning and displeasing God to continue doing this. I'm just trying to encourage somebody that took a hard fall like me and hit rock bottom. I just want to let you know that if you hit rock bottom like me, you can bounce back. All you got to do is repent and give God your heart back. Get back in the fight and start the run again, baby.
Chicago Public School teachers are on strike and classes are canceled for the day. We're going to have a live report coming up with Tanya Francisco, who is with some strikers. We have lots of live reports for you this morning. The Chicago Teachers Union, again, first time striking in 25 years.
Teacher talks broke down yesterday despite a school board offer of a 4-year contract with a 16% pay raise. The sticking points focus mostly on issues of benefits and teacher accountability.
We are not far apart on compensation. However, we are apart on benefits. Another concern is our evaluation procedures. The installation of air conditioning in student classrooms, a possible decrease in teacher training.
So this is about as much as we can do. There's only so much money in the system. There's only so many things we can do that are available to us. We believe will not hurt the education agenda that we think is best for our children.
Bargaining resumes later today. There are no classes today in Chicago Public Schools. Tanya Francisco is live at school board headquarters. Good morning, Tanya.
Good morning, Frank. The picket lines went up here just after 5:30 this morning with a number of teachers as well as community members marching in front of CPS headquarters. They are on strike, as the signs say, and as the message that it says. Earlier today, we spoke to CTU Vice President Jesse Sharkey, who informed us that contract talks will resume this morning. The issue is not over compensation or pay, but the issues do relate to health benefits as well as teacher evaluation process and job security. The district says, or the teachers say, I should say, that they feel that they are being disrespected, that they have not gotten the respect they need while they've been at the table. We did speak to CPS officials this morning. They feel as though they understand and have heard what the teachers wanted, but they feel as though they need accountability as well, and which is why they are pushing for the reforms that they have. They have asked the teachers to hold off on this strike, to get back to the table so that they can work out these issues, what they consider are minor because there's no money really involved in these negotiations or that need to be worked out. They feel like these issues are minor. They feel like they can get back to the table, they can form committees and work these issues out while the kids are in classrooms. But the teachers feel as though this is their biggest bargaining chip and this is what they have to work with in order to get their voices heard. Once again, the teachers are on strike. They began striking here outside CPS headquarters just after 5:30 this morning. This, as you point out, is the first strike for CPS since 1987. That strike lasted 19 days. No word on how long this strike will last, but contract talks are set to resume this morning. Also, it should be pointed out that charter schools are not affected by this strike. The teachers who work at those charter schools are not CTU members. I'm live at Chicago School Board headquarters in downtown Chicago. Tanya Francisco, WGN News.
Thanks, right, Tanya.
And now, the mellow sounds of Jimmy Irvin.
I don't do no harm.
never meant to make you cry. You were the only one I've ever loved in my life. And though it's hard for me to show it, I've got to let you know it. 'Cause darling, I love you more each day. But the word got in my way.
Can't do it no more. I can't sing no more sad songs. 1, 2, 3, hit me. Bop, bop, bop it out of bebop, bop, bop. Yeah, bass man, come on up. 1, 2, 3, hit me. Sound good. Yeah, saxophone on the floor. 1, 2, 3, hit it.
Bianchi holding it on from St. Louis. What's going on, Fina Troy? I know you heard the little lead-in, the little news story I had going on earlier. So is it true that that offer, is that still on the table, that 14% raise or that 4% raise, is that still on the table that they was offering you all?
Pardon?
Is that offer still on the table that Union said that they was giving you all the 4% raise, I mean, I guess in the 3% and 2% therefore on. Is that still on the table for you all? Or have they pulled yet?
According to our union leadership, that was never that. First of all, let's be clear that the board does a lot of pandering in the media, and they they meet with public relations people before they come in front of the media to make sure that they are garnering the support of the public. And they are not averse to overtly lying about situations in order to get the public to support them. And so the whole 3% in the first year of the contract and two thereafter, that was never even given to the union in any type of writing or discussed. But the economic issues are not just the main issues that are on the table at this point.
What are the issues that are on the table at this point?
Well, we definitely need to have some type of cap on classroom sizes. Brahm made a comment, and this was a few days ago, where he said a capable teacher would they be able to should be able to teach 55 students in one class. Now, he's talking about our schools. He's making reference to our schools. His children would never be in classes where there are 55 students. So the agenda that he is trying to implement here in Chicago, it will close up 100 more schools in the next 2 to 3 years. And, of course, if you're closing these schools, you're firing teachers, the kids aren't going anywhere. They're still coming into the system. So they're going to pile our children on top of one another into these dumping ground schools in order to achieve implementing this agenda in Chicago. It's happened in Detroit. It has happened in New Orleans. It has happened in D.C. and New York. So this agenda that he's trying to put in place here in Chicago, we've seen it already. We've seen it fail because there are no high test scores coming as a result. And I don't see anything in writing that says that charter schools are outperforming public schools on these tests. The average is pretty much still the same. As a matter of fact, at Urban Prep, the school that he constantly, the Mayor Daley and Rahm, their scores are averaged between 14 and 16 on the ACT. That's the average in public schools as well.
Right.
So the solution is not charter schools. The solution is stop starving public schools. Give us some resources. Give us smaller classroom sizes so that we can at least be able to compete against their favorite schools that they give all this funding to.
So
the select enrollment schools and the schools with waiting lists. Give us those tools. And another thing that these schools have, they have the ability, the charter schools, they have the ability to get rid of students they don't want. And they send them to us.
So when you say resources, what are you basically referring to as resources?
Well, I'll give you an example. I've been at my school, and I'm not going to say the school's name on the radio, but at my school, I have not had textbooks to give my students since I've been there, and I've been there for the last 7 years. And when I say give them, I mean so they can take them home. It's almost like that's something that is not happening in a lot of the inner city schools. Now, of course, your select enrollment schools, they get textbooks from all of their classes. In our schools, there are only a few select that they actually have the resources to give textbooks to their students. So we have classroom set. Now tell me, is that really happening at a Northside Prep or a Peyton? Of course not. You know, don't cripple and starve our schools and tell us that our kids are failing when you're failing our kids by funneling their resources to these charter schools so you can turn education into a corporate affair.
Right. Well, I agree with you. I agree with you. Well, now the talk from what I'm hearing is that what happens here in Chicago is going to fester out throughout America, and now it has become a national issue. You have Romney and Ryan both siding with Rahm.
Hmm. Speak
you
value.
Know, siding with Rahm, you know. And now is that because Rahm really won't Bill Clinton, Obama to lose so Hillary can get in 2016? I don't know. But let me
I think this is nonpartisan. Both parties are a part of this agenda to corporatize education. They're both a part of it. So this is something, you know, I know we like to say, oh, this is the Republicans doing this or this is the Democrats doing this. This is both of them. This is about the big money that is going to be made when you make education a corporate affair. That's
right.
What it's about.
Yeah. Well, let me see if let me grab another caller in for a second and see what he has to say about this for a minute. What's going on, Pianki? You'd like to weigh in on the situation in Chicago with school strikes?
Yeah, how you doing?
Oh my God, fine, fine. That's Athena Troish. I guess she's a teacher, and I guess she's a union member, and so right there on the picket line.
You know,
right
the
there.
average ACT score in Chicago throughout is 17.7, which is really dismal. But heck, you got some schools there where only 3% of the students is meeting or exceeding state standards. ACT at 13.6, and they're ranking 666 out of 669. There's a terrible. It's got to be a better way.
What? Tell me something. Have you ever seen these tests that they're giving our children?
I've seen these tests, and I'm going to tell you something else. Here in St. Louis, where the classroom is about 15 students per classroom, and they got teachers, about two assistants in each classroom, still don't see anything better.
Well, you have poverty. No one wants to talk about poverty or parent accountability.
Well, then that's something there ain't no parents because you're not teaching the kids how to become parents in the public schools today. And those
I don't understand what you just said. What did you just say?
I said those children are being taught how to be not only not how to be parents, but not how to be citizens.
What? I'm talking about their parents. They're not teaching them. They're not reinforcing
the
child at home.
When did you have a graduation? You had a graduation in June, correct? Out of the 12th grade?
98% of our students graduated. That wasn't in the newspaper, by the way.
All right. Well, during the whole entire 12 years of those children being in the Chicago public school, not one time were they taught civil duties nor how to become parents. Then we expect them the day after graduation all of a sudden be parents. It ain't going to happen.
Well,
I don't remember that
class. I don't remember that class. I don't recall a class that taught me how to be a parent.
Well, when I went to school, they did. And
I mean,
they
what kind of class is that?
And we still do here in some schools here in the St. Louis area. Pomoja, they teach them how to be parents.
What do
so
they do?
In Detroit public schools, they taught them their civic duties.
Are you talking about consumer education?
No, I'm not talking consumer education. I mean, in 1998, Detroit finally wrote a curriculum. And within that curriculum, they have a whole section there on civic duties and parenting. But in another point, these teachers' unions have always been a menace to anything that blacks have wanted to do in their schools. I see you caught up in this. Well, let me explain to it. You pay dues to your union. Your union turn around and turn those in at a state level and probably a national level. Then they turn around and provide campaign funds for your state representatives and even your national representatives. And them very representatives at the state level that parents go up to the state house and testify for charter schools or a changing of this, a changing of that. They just listen to them. Blacks vote, and the teachers' union are paying the campaign, so they're going to be beholden to the teachers' union just like they are beholden to everything else.
And so that you're saying that Rahm and his billionaires aren't doing the same thing?
Oh, I'm not saying they're not doing this. They was doing that before Rahm. They was doing that back during the time of Harold Washington.
That's politics as usual. So I'm not understanding your point.
Well, I'm saying it's no good, and it should come to an end. This is what I think. There are some good public schools, and I'm not saying that, but the majority of them have never done what we would expect for the black community. There should be full
There was a reform. Major reform in education during the Harold Washington movement. That is the reason why it's been 25 years since we had the last strike, or 27 years, whenever. Just for the record, I didn't want that to go by. This is the producer, Ebony. There was major education reform during that era. Okay, it was a very independent time, and it was a rare time. I must say, but it was much reform. I just want you to stand on that. Thank you.
there should be full vouchers, and there should be alternative settings, and also there should be public schools.
You said
where parents can have, yes, vouchers, where parents can have an option to put their children wherever they want to. I mean, it's the parents' responsibility. It's the stakeholders' desire to see a certain type of education for children. Public schools can't do it all. There's no way that they can provide children with the multifaceted skills that they need to compete not only at a national scene but also at an international. These other immigrant children are coming in and whipping butt. And
let me bring another call in. See, Dana has a station. Hold on. Hold on, Dana. And when I come to you, you got your echo on. So I'm gonna get you on.
Hello?
Yeah, what's going on, Dan? I got you on.
Hey, everyone, how are you?
Hello.
Hi. Hey, we'll see.
Wait for the radio. Radio. Hold on,
I got you on speaker. Am I echoing?
Oh, yeah, big time. Doing the whole show.
Okay, is that better?
Oh, no. There we go.
Hold on, let me move away from my computer. Is that better?
There we go.
Okay, so part of the problem is that you have an unrealistic system that's created. Now, you want to know, the parents can take their children anywhere. This society doesn't say you can't take your child anywhere, but you know what they say? We're going to overprice the homes in these lands that have, in these areas that have good schools, and if you can afford it, you can come in. We're going to create a school system that costs more money than a lot of people make, but if you can sacrifice all, don't buy food, don't have a place to live, then you can join. You can come in. Now, these school systems, some of them in the suburban areas, they teach what's on the SAT. Their curriculum is designed differently. It's designed so that these children will be able to go to class. How do I know? Because my sons have participated in both school systems. Okay, and the ones that teach to the test, guess what? Those kids do well, and they get to go to college. Meanwhile, you have a whole group of children who are being kept out. They're being kept out, and they're not just being kept out right now during the election. They've been kept out for a while. And because of that, they end up on the streets. So it's easy to try to blame it on one person, and it's easy to try to say that this is the reason why these children aren't doing well and they can't read and they can't write. You want to create a system where people learn how to be parents. You give them the ability to be home and parent their kids. Don't force them to work 2 and 3 jobs, 4 and 5 jobs, and come home after midnight and expect them to have the best kids in the world. No. Pay them what they're worth when they go to work on these jobs. That's how you help parents be parents. You allow them the ability to be home with their children. And that's not taught in the class.
And can I give you an example of some of the conditions that...
Your mic is too hot. Somebody too close to the computer. I don't know what it is.
Okay, I turn mine on.
Hello?
You're on there. You're on. You're still alive.
Okay. Can I give you an example of some of the conditions that we have to work under? We still have the echo.
Go on there. I got you. Good.
Well, so many of our schools have gone to the whole year-round school thing, but there are quite a few schools in Chicago that do not have air conditioning. So can you imagine a class with over 40 students in it, and the temperature in the classroom is over 100 degrees, and they're expected to learn? And also, and I'll go from a personal experience, I had a class last year, it was a geography, world geography class. I had all grade levels. I had 2 schizophrenic students in that class. I had 8 special needs students in that class. And it was a class that was 36 students. And I did not have a TA, which is a teacher's assistant. I just had me. And so when you put teachers in those kind of conditions and situations, how can you ever expect them to be able to compete with the children, to compete with Rom's children who are in these wonderful schools that have art, that have music? The student to teacher ratio is 1 to 15 or 16 or something like that, and they don't have varying abilities. They're pretty much on the same level in terms of being at grade level.
as a high school teacher in public education, we have to take, this is not the select enrollment school that I work at, we take students that are in the community. What the last mayor did, he expanded boundaries of our community. They were past, we had kids that were miles and miles away, that schools were in their area because they were select enrollment or because they were charter schools that chose what students they wanted to take. Those kids came to our school. So not only did you mix three different gangs in the one building, but you have these varying levels that our students are coming to us, and I don't have a problem. I teach whatever students are in front of me. But we get students that are 3-4 grade levels behind, and in a 2-3 year period, we're supposed to produce ACT scores that are commensurate to schools like Whitney Young and Northside Prep or Peyton. It's unrealistic. And then on top of that, the school is being starved. You have a school where there's one computer lab, you got 2,000 kids. That's our technology, a computer lab.
Well, you know
no
what?
No smart boards, no teacher training in terms to compete to new technologies in education, none of that. But you expect these results that are coming from test scores, and you tell us that, oh, the kids aren't learning to read or write because of what they're getting on these tests. That's ridiculous. That is ridiculous.
Bianchi?
Well, what I was going to tell her, and what's your name, by the way, ma'am?
Athena.
Athena. You know, I'm going to tell you something, Athena. Now, what you just described to somebody, they would say, they say, well, it's working fine. And actually, it's working. That's the way it's intended to work. You know, we had a white school board teacher come on the radio here, a talk show. You know, St. Louis Public School has been taken over by the state. I wonder why come Chicago CPS haven't been taken over by the state. But he came on the radio, and they have a appointed board, and he was a member of the elected board. And he came on the radio, and quite frankly, he said that whites are never going to provide majority all-black school districts with what they need, whereas they can compete against their kids. They're true. And that's true, because what you just described is actually that going on.
It's even so deep that you have minority in Chicago public schools. In Chicago public schools, you have about 65 to 75% minority students going to those schools, and out of the teachers that are teaching them, it's about 19% minority teachers.
It's 49% white. I think it's 49% white teachers in those schools. They just use black children as commodities in these public school systems. That's just the way it's going on. And, you know, you're absolutely right, Athena. You've got children, our children are bringing to your classroom conditions that they experience in the greater community. And our leaders don't want to even address those conditions that's going
absolutely
on in the community. That's
absolutely
what the problem is. You got to allow this Negro leadership out there that's
mm-hmm.
just turning their butts up to
absolutely
all these different factions. So yeah. I know the problems that you have. See, it ain't your fault.
Okay, thank you.
Just
please say something.
It.
You know, it's like, but there are people downtown and all these people who are part of this corporate agenda. They want to act as if the social factors do not play a part in the performance results of these children. And it's just idiotic for me. It makes no sense.
And I can tell you something else. If you took Paul Robeson, and Paul Robeson ranked in the top 6 of the state of Illinois in academic performance, and Paul Robeson is practically 100% black, they still will close that school down.
Yes,
because case in point, you got schools in the Kansas City school district, African Center schools, where those schools, not even the elementary schools have been ranking in the top 5 in the state of Missouri. And this past summer, they got rid of the whole kabocha, all of them. They've been around since 1994. And they've been constantly. They don't even have metal detectors in these schools.
Wow.
And they closed them.
Corporate agenda.
Well, we get Michelle Bridgman online. She types up. Let me get down. She says, "What is the say? We don't. What is the name? What she say? I lost it again."
Right.
Yeah, get it, both of them.
Majority of the dismay we face is because we don't stand up and fight for our rights. And
that's
poverty
right.
or not, we don't understand that we have a voice, but we don't use it. We leave
that's
the rights
right.
to our kids' education up to others. And then she goes on to say, Afina, how much involvement do you receive from student parents?
I'll give her an example. The last parent pickup I had out of 150 parents, I had 6 to show up.
Well, you know what, thing I'm going to tell you something. I've seen parents in Kansas City School Board, you would have 500 black parents show up at the meetings. In Detroit, when they was going through their stuff, they used to have 5,000 black folks at those school board meetings.
When
you
was
had
that?
There's books on it. Get the book called Educating Black Males. It's by Clifford Watson.
I think I've read that.
It's in that book, and he talks about the African Center School, how Malcolm X Academy was outperforming the schools in the outlying area in Goose Point and Van Arbor. So black parents have came to the task, but they have gotten to the point now where it's apathy, and really you don't got to the point where you don't have no parents. All you got to just really cheer them, just raise and cheer them. That they wasn't educated, so how would they know how to act?
So anything Dana?
Pardon?
No, Dana, I saw Dana had a question. Want to say anything, Dana?
Well, I mean, it's just a system. It's just a system that's designed for failure. And then when people fail, the first thing they want to do is publicize our children and put us out there as if, you know, we're not trying and as if we're not doing what we need to do to help them. How do you work and counteract a system that is meant for failure, that is designed for failure, and all they're doing is filling the jails with these men, with these young black men? I'm telling you, I worked at the jail system, and 8 out of 10 that came in there every single night were African American.
Yeah.
And so when you talk about the parents that aren't home, you want to go find out where the fathers are, you go down to the courthouse because that's where they are. And so we got a whole system that's working against us, and then we wonder, gosh, why is it so hard for us?
Yeah, when Michelle Bridgman's typing online, she said, you come together as united, you create your own system, which is true. 347-838-9825 is our number. This is Jimmy's Underground Radio Network.
You know, it's easy to say that, you know what, okay, they want to follow you around in the stores and you go open up your own stores. They don't want to educate your youth, you go open up your own schools. They want to do this, they don't want to do this for you, then you go ahead and you build your own. When you have a system that is designed to keep us out, where do you get the loans from? And when you get the loans, where do you get the patrons from? And then you look at the neighborhoods. Where do you build in a place where people that don't have money, what do you expect them to do? They're going to break in and try to come and get it when you have folks that aren't unaccustomed. So you can't – the answer isn't, yes, it is good to have your own. I agree 100%.
Yeah,
but
like,
neither having my own is not going to be the solution.
Well, you know, blacks did have – they did form the Council of Independent Black Institutions after the so-called Black Power movement, when they couldn't get the curriculum in the public schools, they went out and started their own schools. And those schools, you only got a handful of them left today, but those schools were outstanding. You know, back in the 90s, I went around the whole country, and I was sat in classrooms for, you know, however long and videotaped these outstanding black schools. I even came to Chicago and videotaped the Betty Shabazz School over there near where it is. I went to Detroit, videotaped Paul Robeson, Malcolm X, Inciroma, which is still in existence today. And I went out to Los Angeles and videotaped Marcus Garvey Academy, who I've seen children take their GED at the seventh grade, take the college entrance exam, and carry in either 13 or 19 units at age 13. So, yeah, we got the schools, but, you know, black folks just don't support them. And not only, you know, a teacher shouldn't have to be on welfare and teaching in one of those schools, and that's exactly what you have because they couldn't pay them enough.
Right.
So it's always something out there. Like the one lady said, it's always something. But we have the talent. We know how to do it. We've done it before. But, you know, and then your leadership is against that kind of stuff.
Right.
When you got leadership that the system turns to, and they say, oh, we don't need that, then that's what that's another big problem that you have there. So the teacher on here tonight, I sympathize with it. I know exactly what you're coming from. You're not the only one, by the way, not only in Chicago, but I can tell you what's going to happen. They're going to try to bust that down like they've done in many cities across the country.
We know. The agenda is here. It has already happened in Detroit. It's happened in Kansas City, D.C., New York, New Orleans. I mean, we understand what we're up against. We're up against billionaires. We're up against a billionaire agenda to privatize and create a city full of charter schools.
Well, you know, I stand strong and I stand with you all on the situation. But you know, I am a voucher person because, like the person on in the chat room typed, Ms. Bridgman, she said, "Stop being a slave to a system." She said somebody's asking the wrong questions, but I believe if we can educate our own people, because it does not make sense that 19% of the urban educating teachers are black. That does not make sense that 19% of our teachers are black here in Chicago, being that we have a high African American constituency.
Well,
it's funny now that they're listening to the teachers. Is it listening to the teachers now? Are the teachers getting a good play in the media? Are they getting all this good, gracious play because their constituency is white? You know, I wonder how they would play this out if the majority of the teachers were black. Would they quickly end to cease it? You know, I'm just wondering because just the numbers are so low. You know, the numbers are so low. So it's not like they're fighting for black jobs per se, you know, given the numbers of everybody who this is affecting. But, you know, when you look at the system, it seems as if, not to be racist, everybody out there, that the white teachers have finally had enough because they realize that it's not worth it and they're being janked. Would that be a fair assessment, Fina?
Well, you know what? It's like at the school I teach, there are, I want to say the staff, it's about 50-50 in terms of demographics. And we're out there together on the picket lines. I mean, because we understand the gravity. This is about our careers also. I mean, because the agenda that's coming down are going to close so many more schools and pile our students up into classrooms, a lot of us won't even be around in the next year or two. If Rahm gets what he wants with his appointed school board.
Not to cut you off for a second, but in the chat room, Ms. Bridgman is saying the learning has to start from home. The problem is
absolutely
that ignorance is consuming our community.
Yes. Yes. And like the brother was saying about the schools that were African-centered, the successful schools, I would venture to say the common denominator of all those schools is that the parents were involved in that child's education. It has to be reinforcement of learning at home. And there are, as a matter of fact, my goddaughter, she's in the gifted program, where the parent has to look online on the internet to get homework activities every night, and there's something else they have to do on a board. But these are some things that a lot of my kids would not be able to do because there may not be internet access at home. It's like it's just one of those things. Parents have to start making sacrifices for their children's education if they want them to be able to compete as adults. is very important. That is a missing. That is what's missing in what I'm seeing in a lot of my students from my experience. If there's a lot of apathy amongst the parents, or they're giving too much to the student, and the student is not giving anything back. So you got kids that have 1.8 GPAs, have the phones, got the True Religion jeans, the Uggs, and everything. They should not have those things. They have not earned that. But you're just giving them things. You might have to go to work or whatever you're doing, whatever your situation is, but the kids are not being held accountable to be successful, to be above average or excellent in school. And that's also a major problem.
You know, another thing, and with the conditions that our children bring to the classroom, you need to have at least one tutor in the classroom per no more than three students.
Yes.
No more than three students. You should have a volunteer, and that volunteer should be paid. That's why I'm for our retirees to be able to come back and act in that capacity and, you know, where they can get paid. Our athletes need to have tutors with them also. Not only tutors, but chaperones, and make sure that they stay out of trouble. So it's a lot of things that need to be done, and it's just not happening. And it haven't been. I have never seen it. It happens in spurts here and there, and you can't say that all black schools can't be successful. I can point out a lot of my grandson attends a high school that's all black, where 99% of the students go on to college. So that's not true.
Right.
But in another point, I don't know what the average daily allocation allotment is for a CPS student. It's probably like $13,000, $14,000, maybe $15,000. But here's the thing you look at. Don't look at that amount. Look at the actual classroom instruction, the amount of money that's allocated toward that. And I guarantee you, here in St. Louis, when using the excuse and say, well, the students get $15,500 per student. You mean you can't educate them? Well, that's not the classroom instruction. The classroom, the money that's spent in the classroom instruction for the books, the desks, the teacher's salary amounts to about $5,500 per student. The rest of it goes every place else.
Can you imagine the fact that these teachers, if a student is allocated $15,000 and then the teacher is trying to teach 20, 30, 40 kids, but then the teacher is only being paid $30,000, there's something wrong with that system. Because you've got two children that's paying the entire year's salary for that teacher, and you've got 38 other students per classroom, but money is not coming back into the classroom. Where's it going?
Yeah.
Well, there's an online conversation going on in the chat room. Bridgman says, kids live in a world of false self-entitlement today. They're so far removed from the realities of this world, and so are the young parents. Success begets success. Ignorance begets ignorant, point blank.
Yeah.
That's Oh, that's someone in the chat room talking about that. But go on, I'm sorry, could y'all continue on?
That was an excellent point. And I know there's been a lot of talk about, you know, because, but let's be clear about who controls the Sun-Times and the Tribune. You know, a lot of those editorials have been favorable for Rahm's agenda for the last year. And so there's this constant mantra of, oh, those teachers make average $71,000 a year, and these kids aren't making or passing these standardized tests or whatever. And I really think that number is so bloated. It is so bloated because, honestly, the teachers that are making that kind of money, they've either been in the system at least 20, 25 years. They have multiple degrees, and at that point in your career, if you've been in for years, you should be making that kind of money. This is the profession that makes all professions possible. But for the most part, our teachers are not making that kind of money. And let's also remember that we live in Chicago. The cost of living here is ridiculous, and we cannot live outside the city. You know, so that's just another tactic that's being used by that publicity, that the board's publicity office, to misconstrue what we're trying to do as a union here in Chicago.
Well, what can get y'all back? What can get the two parties together? What do you think can get the two parties together?
Well, you know what? Rahm has to stop. And I'm saying Rahm because that board represents his agenda. They were handpicked to push through what he wants done in the city of Chicago and with the public school system. Okay, so that's the only reason why I keep saying his name, because this is his agenda. You know, and
when the Jean Claude?
Huh?
When the Jean Claude Van Damme?
Well, that you notice I haven't said his name right, because it's like a puppet. You know, if you turn around, you'll see Rahm holding some strings behind him.
I've noticed seeing Vitale lately and not Jean-Claude lately. And,
let me ask you a question.
Go ahead.
Is the district provisional or is it full accredited?
What's your question now?
Is the district accreditation, is it provisional or is it full credit?
It's supposed to be full accredited.
Yep, that's what it is. It's politics. No way in the world CPS should be full of credit. It should be provisional at the least. And then the state would have came in and took over the board. But the politics that's going on there.
You got some heavy
politics going on there. That school district should have been provisional long time ago. And then at that point, the state board comes in and takes over the district and appoints a provisional board to run the district. How's the financing of the district? Are they over budget?
Well, they say we have this deficit, but the deficit was created under the last mayor. He had he instituted this, and this is what Arne Duncan. This is when Arne Duncan was the CEO here. They had this Renaissance 2010 plan where they would take schools and go in and spend millions of dollars break them up into four schools in one building. And so they would also have a principal for each of those schools. They would have assistant principals for those schools, deans. So this was, in essence, wasteful spending. And there's also a building that was on 39th and was perishing or something like that, where they went in, they bought it for a dollar, but they spent over $50 million to rehab it, and now it's empty. It's a warehouse. You know, just wasteful spending from that initiative that failed, by the way. And now there's this deficit that they're acting as if we created. And so we're being hurt as a result of their wasteful spending during those years of trying to turn Chicago into a contractor, a city of contracting, and privatized charter schools. So,
In Kansas City during the DSEG, they had a DSEG judge, and the judge brought everybody in and said, what would a model school look like? And they drew up plans for a model school. This school had United Nations type auditorium where you had translators through the microphones and the children came. They had an Olympic sized swimming pool in the Southwest. They had a zoo. It cost $1 billion and still didn't make any difference. So, and what you're saying is actually right. They go out and they spend money like that, but the people that's, you know, it's just like a patronage system, who, you know, the contractors and so forth that's making the money off these public schools. And another thing, I bet your food service is not cooked in building. I bet it's brought in with Sodexo.
In the chat room, someone has wanted to know what ever happened to No Child Left Behind. What's the deal with that act now?
Same thing happened to
play.
Go in 2000.
It's still
Before
in play.
That, go ahead, I'm sorry.
It's still in play. That's the reason why everything is being based on these test scores. And we have to do test prep. And I'm going to give you a sample question. There was a question on the test where were in preparation, where a kid, they were, it was in reference to the various parts of a home, and it, and I think it asked them where in the house would the family do something. I can't remember. But the answer was the family room. And this kid had no idea what a family room is. That's not the reality of most of the children that I teach. And so in that, in essence, some of these tests, some parts of these tests are still culturally biased, because you have people that are creating this test that don't know the experiences of our children.
Right. I agree with those tests. You know what I mean? See, that always remind me of the mastery learning when I was little. The funny part about it is that things have not changed since I was in high school, since I was in grammar school here in Chicago. You know, matter of fact, my mother led a parental strike against the Chicago public school system, and it was dealing with the mastery learning center, saying how a test cannot determine what a child learning is, passing on kids day by day. It seemed that the mastery learning programs came back into No Child Left Behind, because that was something that they had marched to get out. Then they came with something slick like the Iowa test later on. There wasn't a mastery learning, but now you got the Iowa test. And then from the Iowa test, what you got? You got now this test you got to make sure the child left behind. But back in the early 80s, late 70s, you know, during the Parent Equalizer days or Mother days, the march was against these tests going on right here and right now. Now, with that being said, we know you can't get, we know they're not going to take the test out of the system now, but what will be, what will help get the negotiations in getting the children back their teachers and the teachers back at work?
You know what, Jimmy? I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead, Dana.
I was going to say, I've never been a fan of standardized testing, and the reason is because that test doesn't necessarily mean that you have learned the things necessary to go to college. And nor does the failure that mean that you can't pass college. It just means that you can pass a certain type of test.
Right.
Now, I think the biggest thing that will help these children, and the biggest thing, the greatest thing that will help the teachers, is if you pay them what they're worth. You give them more salary, and you give them resources, and you make these classrooms smaller. You want the kids to learn. You put them in a place where they have the ability to learn. And it's hard to teach 40 people, and then make sure that you're hitting everyone that where they need and addressing all the concerns that each person has. It's almost impossible.
Yeah. But Ron doesn't think so. He says a capable teacher can teach 55 students in a class.
Well, sir, but he's not going to think that way because his kids aren't attending those schools.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So,
it's
not his issue.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree. Our kids are throwaway to these people.
Yeah, so as long as he's not affected, then guess what? He can set 1,000 policies, because every policy that he's setting for someone else's child, he is not affected by.
That's right.
You know, and so to me, if he's going to be making policies such as that one, then he needs to be the first one to volunteer and to put his child over in those same situations.
No, he didn't dare put his child in CPS.
No, he's not going to do that. And I'm going to tell you, I've been watching this. I've been watching this since the 70s, back when they had the incident in New York with Bedford Stuy there in Crown Heights. And it's the same results that you're going to see, and that's nothing.
Yeah.
So the only thing I can say for you, Anita, is hang in there. Hang in there and get your pension so you can.
Thank you, sir. I'll try to do that. I don't think I'm going to be there around that long, because I'm one of those veteran teachers they want to get rid of. I mean, they want to get our salaries off the book. They want to bring in a cheap labor force. It's almost like insourcing, if for lack of a better word. You know, they have a pipeline already with Lewis University here in Chicago, where they want to replace veteran teachers. And so that's one of those. I don't even know whether or not I'll be in Chicago public school system in the next 5 years. I have no idea. And it really is dependent upon really these negotiations, these contract negotiations, because I'm at a school that would be slated for that whole turnaround thing. You know, even though our scores are higher than Urban Prep, the kids that's always on TV and the news, we went up again, and we graduated 98% of our seniors left, but that means nothing to them because they have goals in mind for the school that we teach at. So with all the social factors that come into play with our students, we still find a way to teach our children. And in the media, they're making it seem like we just aren't doing a thing, like we read the paper every day or something, and the kids just there and do what they want to do. And that's simply not true. We're working hard.
Well, that's been going on forever, and you still can see it happening. And Jimmy, that's what, Mr. What's your name again, brother?
Who, me? Athena.
Not Athena, the host.
Jimmy.
James. Jimmy.
Jimmy Lee. I'm here.
That's why you always hear me constantly harping on the economics. Blacks need to control the economics in their own community, need to produce their own businesses so you can hire your own folks.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
our children need to be taught that. That way we wouldn't have to be dependent on, you know, this type of behavior to educate our children, because they're not going to do it. Them kids, you know, they're being used. Even the Title I, the lunch program, is nothing but a subsidy for the U.S. agriculture business, which we don't participate in.
Mm-hmm.
Then when they come out of there with no education, they end up getting involved in some illicit activity and going to prison. And the prison is all located outside of the urban areas where there's no jobs.
That's right.
Yeah, but you typed on earlier something about the Iowa test was the basic skills test, yeah. The mastery learning basic skills test was the Iowa test, you know. And we got rid of that skill test.
Yeah, we mastered that test. When black kids mastered that test, then they changed the test and went to something else.
They sure did. It's the ISAT now.
Yeah. You know, they keep changing. Go on there.
Honestly, even if something like that were to happen, what happens is then the people who are then trying to move away from and teach their own and develop their own, then those are the people that's placed under investigation because they're called separatists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it becomes something wrong with that system.
Yeah. Let me play the little news clip that we were talking about, ladies and gentlemen. 347-838-9825.
Chicago public school teachers are on strike and classes are canceled for the day. We're going to have a live report coming up with Tanya Francisco, who is with some strikers. We have lots of live reports for you this morning. The Chicago Teachers Union again, first time striking in 25 years.
Teacher talks broke down yesterday despite a school board offer of a four-year contract with a 16% pay raise. The sticking points focus mostly on issues of benefits and teacher accountability.
We are not far apart on compensation. However, we are apart on benefits. Another concern is our evaluation procedures. The installation of air conditioning in student classrooms, a possible decrease in teacher training.
So this is about as much as we can do. There's only so much money in the system. There's only so many things we can do that are available to us. We actually believe will not hurt the education agenda that we think is best for our children.
Bargaining resumes later today. There are no classes today in Chicago public schools. Tanya Francisco is live at school board headquarters. Good morning, Tanya.
Good morning, Frank. The picket lines went up here just after 5:30 this morning with a number of teachers as well as community members marching in front of CPS headquarters. They are on strike, as the signs say, and as the message that it says. Earlier today, we spoke to CTU Vice President Jesse Sharkey, who informed us that contract talks will resume this morning. The issue is not over compensation or pay, but the issues do relate to health benefits as well as teacher evaluation process and job security. The district says, or the teachers say, I should say, that they feel that they are being disrespected, that they have not gotten the respect they need while they've been at the table. We did speak to CPS officials this morning. They feel as though they understand and have heard what the teachers wanted, but they feel as though they need accountability as well, and which is why they are pushing for the reforms that they have. They have asked the teachers to hold off on this strike, to get back to the table so that they can work out these issues, what they consider are minor because there's no money really involved in these negotiations or that need to be worked out. They feel like these issues are minor. They feel like they could get back to the table, they can form committees and work these issues out while the kids are in classrooms. But the teachers feel as though this is their biggest bargaining chip and this is what they have to work with in order to get their voices heard. Once again, the teachers are on strike. They began striking here outside CPS headquarters just after 5:30 this morning. This, as you point out, is the first strike for CPS since 1987. That strike lasted 19 days. No word on how long this strike will last, but contract talks are set to resume this morning. Also, it should be pointed out that charter schools are not affected by this strike. The teachers who work at those charter schools are not CTU members. I'm live at Chicago School Board headquarters in downtown Chicago. Tanya Francisco, WGN News.
Thanks, Tanya.
Yeah, so when they say benefits, Athena, what do they mean by benefits that y'all are working with?
Well, there's this new wellness program that the city wants everybody to be a part of, and there are some issues with the jump in terms of the premium that families will be forced to pay. Like, for instance, if, say, the first year of the contract, there's a 2% cost of living. Let's make sure that we understand this is a cost of living raise. If there's a 2% cost of living raise and the premium goes up 1.7%, essentially, what is that, a 0.03% raise? So there's really no raise, because the insurance premiums are going up. So, and also, since we are working a longer day, the mayor wants us to just simply work with no compensation, with the added 12 days that he's put on the calendar. Have no problem with that. Have no problem with that. But you're not just going to force us to work days and not pay us for them. I mean, this is a volunteer organization. We're not babysitters. We are paid professionals. And if you want to implement, there's so much to implement in a short period of time. And I think that this is the reason why we're out on the picket line. He came in blazing. It's about, I mean, he's a politician. He should understand politics. There's a way that he could have, that we could have compromised by now. But he basically came in saying, this is what you're going to do. That's it and that's all, because he did not think that we would get the 75% authorization to strike. And so now there's this sense of urgency because we are on strike. But this is something that could have been dealt with long ago, because we've been at the table since November 2011.
Yeah, everybody noticed that y'all have been on the tables since last year, November 2011, and I guess they didn't think y'all was going to be striking. But speaking about 2011, seeing how this is the anniversary of 9/11, what memories you? Where were you at when the Twin Towers got hit, Athena? Could you tell our listeners how you felt about that?
Oh wow, I was teaching at Westinghouse at the time, and there was a colleague, his name was Carlos, I never forget, he came screaming through the halls, there's been a terrorist attack coming on the TV. So, you know, I just so happened to have a television in my classroom, and so we sat and watched the second tower go down. So we saw the news clip of the first tower going down, but then we actually live saw the second tower go down. So it was a frightening experience. Because at that point, no one knew whether or not it would be a strike in all the major cities, or whether or not Chicago, Sears Towers would be next. My mother and my sister was working downtown. So, I mean, there was a panic. There was certainly a panic because we just did not know whether or not it would be a nationwide terrorist attack.
What about you, Dana, in D.C.? I know you was on probably on base or overseas. Or where was you at when 9/11 happened?
I was actually working. I was on my clinicals. So I was working in the hospital, and I was inside of the patient's room when I saw an airplane fly into the tower. And as I was watching the event on TV, I saw the building fall, and it didn't look real. I remember saying, gosh, it looks like the building's falling, which now in retrospect is kind of dumb. But, you know, I had just never seen that before in my entire life, and I never expected to see it. So I didn't know what it was, even though I was watching it occur. So I stood there with my patient, and I watched it. And then after that, I called some people who I needed to contact, and so that I could coordinate making sure that I returned to my workspace expeditiously in case they needed me. And so that's where I was. I was with one of my patients.
Right. How was the effect when they said the Pentagon got attacked? How was everybody in your base or your facility? How did they take that?
It was unbelievable, actually. I mean, you just never expect anything like that to happen here in the United States. We have this sense of security that was challenged that day. You know, it was challenged not just there, not just in D.C. It was challenged all over. And so, it was unreal to see something like that happen. And it was also sad to know the impact that an event like that had on and so many lives.
Afina, how did your students take it while they was watching that live episode transpire?
Oh, when they saw the towers fall, they were afraid. They were afraid. Because,
so,
I mean, really they wanted to get out of the school building because they were afraid that it would be attacked as well. So,
right.
It was instant fear.
Well, you know, so many years after it, can you recall when you thought maybe we went back to normalcy? What was your sense of normalcy after 9/11? When did you realize you were straight and everything has been all right? Or have we been back to normalcy since 9/11? I know everything has changed. We have a black president. You know what I'm saying? So everything has changed. But, so, I mean, your sense of normalcy. What was your sense of normalcy, Afina, after since 9/11?
Well, I think my sense of normalcy, I was caught up. I was swept up in the euphoria of fear when 9/11 occurred, and there was this instant, like, this, what is the word I'm looking for, backlash against people from the Middle East that looked, or even, some of them weren't even from the Middle East. You had Indians that looked Middle Eastern. So
stuff, right.
For me, my comfort level came when I got used to, when I traveled, not having to feel the nerves of looking of people who were Indian or Middle Eastern or Arab at the airport, and not feeling the fear that, oh my God, the plane might go down or something like that. I don't feel that fear. It's been some years since I felt that fear, you know, because it's really a racist attitude. It was unfortunate that, you know, that was something that even still today you have those type of attitudes toward people of Arab descent when they fly, you know. But the safety regulations, you know, I think it makes me feel a little safer when I'm flying. But the normalcy came, I guess, maybe 5 years after the event.
5 years after the event, that's cool. Cause let me tell you why, you know, things are kind of crazy and out wacky. We have my man Pianchi on here. He just went out. Now, the last thing he said in the chat room was, good luck to the teacher. She knows what's going on. Now, as my friend Danny can attest, Pianchi is not an easy man to have on your side. I was waiting for the bang, 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 the gloves to go out. I just knew he was going to take opposite of what you had to say just because. And that shows me that the teachers really must have the upper hand because you was able to sway Pianchi. Or maybe it's just Pianchi's some container. I don't know. Maybe it's something. Maybe Pianchi got something against you, Dana. What do you think?
Matter of fact, Pianchi is very, and it's always good to hear what he has to say. I love it when he comes on the show, even if he likes to debate with me a lot.
Yeah, he ran my girl Highland off the show. I thought Highland might not come back on.
Now, Bianchi, that was the brother that I was debating with, right?
Yeah, talking to,
okay.
Yeah.
I have to apologize. My tone was really, I was really passionate in the beginning, but I'm very passionate about this situation because I'm passionate about our children and our community. This is not just a teacher's fight, though, and that's what I really need the community to understand, that this is a community fight. We're fighting for your children and their children because these corporate agenda people, they could care less about our kids. You have one of the board members to say that we need to give those kids a better opportunity so one day they can go into the workforce. You know, not be a president or a doctor or some type of have a business or entrepreneur, none of that. She's looking at us like our kids are going to be future factory workers or something like that. Like they're not intelligent enough to rise above that because that's all they think that our kids deserve. We're fighting for better schools for our children. We need those small classroom sizes, especially at the ages, at the young, tender ages in kindergarten level, first grade. It is unacceptable to have classrooms with 30-plus students at that level. How are these kids going to learn how to read? It's unacceptable. So that's what we're fighting for. We're fighting for better schools for our children. This is a community fight.
I agree. But how long are y'all willing to stay out?
Now, that's how long. How long is Rom willing to allow, you know, to fight? I mean, that's the thing. It's like this is a community fight, but this is also a national fight for the soul of public education. I want to go to work tomorrow. Okay, I miss my students. I like my job. I love my kids. I want to go to work, but I want better resources for children. I want better opportunities for those children. I'm tired of seeing them being shortchanged. So however long I need to not get paid and fight this fight, that's how long I'm going to do it.
So you mean to tell me it's not going to be no Chicago football teams going downstate this year, I take it, huh?
I'm hoping that that's not the case. I really hope and pray that they get something done this weekend. I hope they get something done this weekend.
I think
really
the state is not going to allow them to come in, so they're going to need to give y'all those records. Well, y'all 2-12. I'm sorry. Y'all forfeited those games. It ain't my fault y'all went in. It's lucky they don't play Catholic schools. Hope they go through that run where they play. You know, they got the NCAA state. Hope they ain't got that conference where they play like the of the world or Bishop Max or the. You know what I'm saying? You know how everybody tried to pad their schedule with that one little Catholic school? You know, it's always a Catholic school, public school game, and it always counts toward the record. You know, it's always about out-of-conference games, and, you know, I hope that
don't. Why can't we make up the games, though? I mean.
Why won't Illinois allow that to happen, though? That's what I'm saying. What's the situation?
Why wouldn't they?
Is it that they don't want Chicago students to participate downstate? You tell me. Is it a punishment?
You got a point there.
Are we being punished because we got Rahm Emanuel as mayor? Are we The puppets are using Rahm Emanuel as a sticking point to get to Obama. You got Rahm Emanuel sweating because Paul Ryan, yeah, we agree with you, busted up, homie. And they know Rahm, listen, they know Rahm ain't going to, he can't disagree with them, and he can't agree with them. He's burning up. So every day, I mean, yeah, y'all got the man going on fire, but my question is, how long are y'all willing to stay out? I mean, the man got 9 fingers. He might be willing to have 8. He might willing to take another one off. You know what I'm saying? The man lost his fingers. I mean, he's a tough cookie.
Yeah,
you know?
And that's the reason why we're in this mess, because he don't know how, he doesn't understand how to treat his constituents. We're the people that vote. We need some respect. You can't just run over us
boy.
And tell us what we're going to do.
Well, that's Ron's boy. What were you about to say, Dana?
Who got 9 fingers?
Rahm Emanuel, we got 9 fingers. Real.
What's the story behind that finger? What happened to that finger?
Well, I don't know. He said he got cut off in the way he saw me as a child. Well, I don't know. He could be in a gang. I don't know.
He might have fell down on one of his dance moves when he was in ballerina class.
I mean,
he was not in ballerina class.
I did ballerina. Yeah. We didn't call tiny dancer.
Ballet dancer.
They call him Mary Tiny Dancers on the radio. You know.
He was what?
Mary Tiny Dancer. That's what they call him on the radio.
That's what he was doing. He went to college for dance. I mean, he's a ballet dancer.
Ballet dancer.
Isn't that amazing? A ascendancy to the mayor of Chicago, the chief of staff of the president.
So what? Listen, how about this? Yeah, listen, being chief of staff, you got to dance around some things. So it pays to be a ballerina. But
right,
when it comes
right.
down to Chicago, if your ass can't tap dance, you can get shit up. You know what I'm saying? You know,
right.
You can't no little pay yet. All that is for the this house club. All that ballet shit is for the house. But if you can't tap dance being a mayor, then you might as well give it up and kill it. You know, and because now he has backed himself up to a corner where it's become a national issue. Where it
right.
has, it, I mean, you got Rush Limbaugh jumping in. Oh. You got Laura
is that,
Washington.
Is that
as a matter of fact.
Is
you
that
know
your
what?
Favorite radio personality.
Yep, my man Rush is involved in it. And the
oh
fact Rush speaks out and said this, that if the Republicans don't win the White House this year, they need to kill the party. You got everybody right now. See, it's
those
funny.
Those are fear tactics. You know, Republicans are really good at fear tactics.
No,
I
you're the fear.
I appreciate that. But some of these people you mentioned, and one of them especially, is the biggest idiot, one of the biggest idiots that's walking this planet.
Oh, Rush, yeah.
But no, what they're scared of is this.
No way.
They are scared of 8 years of black rule. Come January 12th, 8 years of black rule. What are they trying to do right now? They're trying to blow the party up because you know how strong the Republican bench is? We got number one come off the bench now. We got our straight up point guard. We got Condi come off the point. We got our shooting guard. We got 999 straight threes all day. We got Herman Cain. We got the big man in the middle, Michael Steele, posting everybody up. Give me power forward. We got playing the part of Moses Malone. We got Colin Powell coming off the spot, playing the part of Moses Malone. And with the big nose straight shooter, Arturo Davis just flipped the script. We got Mia Hamm on the bench also. I'm just saying the long line of qualified blacks that's qualified to be president. And now
you
the party looking at
slogan
like this.
Is, right?
No,
you
the
know
party
what the slogan
looking, what's the slogan?
Let's not renege in 2000. What is it, 2012?
Oh,
don't renege in 2012.
Right. Well, listen.
They stand outside the RN, the Republican convention, with those signs, with all those racist messages on it.
The point I'm saying is, Obama did Obama renege on his promises? I want Obama renege. He ain't pro-neg neither.
All politicians renege on their promises. All of them. They lied to get elected. That's politics, you know that.
Well, listen, Reverend Wright. Listen, Reverend Wright. The point I'm going to say is this, that the Republicans got a deeper bench, and now the party is getting scared because they realize this. Here in America, just like in Chicago and Cook County, but here in America, you cannot get elected strictly on the white vote. The white vote can't get you in no more. I mean, George Bush had the black vote. That's how come he won. You know, people fail to realize that George Bush got overwhelming the Christian black vote. That's right. Black vote put Christian off.
It was a few of you Negroes that voted for that dude.
Right. What I'm saying is this: the last man to get the white man vote all the way and win the White House was George H. Bush. Outside of that, you need the black vote to win the White House. And Dana, that's the hidden secret that they don't tell black people. I mean, John McCain had all the white vote, couldn't pull it off. I'm going to go here again. Mitt Romney will get all the white vote, still can't pull it off. You can't pull off the white vote, you just can't do it. You see, and the people of color don't realize how powerful they are. And that's why you're going to hear a lot of banter on the far, far right saying that if Mitt Romney can't do it now, throw the party over, start over new, yada, 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 because they know the alternative is coming straight off the bench, Condi Rice, Colin Powell, Jimmy Lee. I mean, we deep on the bench. We deep on the bench. You know? We're deep on the bench.
You on the bench. On the bench.
You know, we deep on the bench because it ain't our time. We ain't our time to come off yet. Dude got 59 days to shoot his shots off. And after that,
Romney,
it's over.
No, Jimmy. That Romney, are you serious?
No, listen.
That liar.
What
now,
I'm
he's
saying,
a liar.
All politics is local.
Okay.
I'm voting for the crazy man, Jesse Jackson. That's what I'm voting for. If I'm a cast a vote, I'm a cast for an insane man in D.C., Jesse Jackson, so he can keep his job and go to jail from Congress. That's what I'm suggesting everybody in the second district.
You want to vote for Jesse?
I'm strong to tell everybody vote for Jesse Jackson Jr. so he can go to jail from Congress. I don't want the man to go to jail from his crib.
Oh, you want to go to jail? Okay.
From Congress. Why go to jail at the crib? There's no excitement in that. There's no excitement in that. You know, pull him a screen. He should be pulled and screened. For matter of fact, like I said, he's not going to jail. He's protected by the government right now.
That's because he's getting his test together. That's why he was at the Mayo Clinic. He wasn't getting his test together.
I guess you have not been listening to my show regularly. In the next 14 minutes, I'm going to explain it to you. The Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson Jr., because people fail to realize he is a minister. Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson Jr. is not being seen for bipolar. Yes, he might have bipolar. They've been through that. No, he's not being seen for guy bypassing surgery. Everybody know about his surgery already. No, he's not being seen for stress.
That the liquor problem.
Or the liquor problem. The elephant in the room, Fina, is... The elephant in the room is that Jesse Jackson, I think at least I have, hold on, Jesse Jackson Jr., major financial contributor, Robert Nyack, the man who had $6 million to give to Robert Griffin to get Jesse Jackson elected, got his money from skimming the government off Medicare fraud. Now, two things, Athena, either A, Jesse is taking money from dirty mob-type figures, or B, Jesse was wearing a wire, and that's why Robert Nyack is in jail, and he can't be seen no more. You dig where I'm coming from? Let me quote your man, Beavers.
People here, if you wear a wire, you come up dead here in Chicago. Just ask Kelly. You wear a wire, I'm no snitch. I'm not wearing no wire.
All I'm just saying, that's the rule here in Chicago, ain't it? I'm just saying. How many people came up missing in the last 4 or 5 years?
I'm just saying.
Or committed suicide, quote unquote.
Or committed suicide, right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or committed suicide. The point I'm saying is, now, it's no secret that Jesse came out and said, didn't he say he was wearing a wire? Didn't he say he worked for the government? Is that true? That's his mouth. This is nobody making no throwing no stuff at his ass. You know what I'm saying? This ain't nobody just lying on the man. This is his own word. So if what I'm at, don't buy the hype because there's too many stories out. The real truth of the matter is.
You want me to go and vote for Jesse? You want me to vote for Jesse?
I mean, well, hey, no, honestly, it's one shot, one kill. One shot, one kill. You get one bullet. All I say, honestly, being a union member representative, and I know it's going to be 59 days for union people to come up. I mean, how are you going to vote? I knew you're down with Obama, so I knew you're going to vote with Obama, but how is everybody else feeling you? I mean, really, where y'all vote going to be at? People, see, that's the other
it's
elephant in the room
looking
I'll at
you.
I'll
tell you this. That was raised actually at one of our meetings, you know, because there are a lot of delegates that are not happy with President Obama, but there was a question posed to them. And their question was, well, who in this room is going to vote for Mitt Romney? And not one hand went up. So,
but the point I'm saying is, what about local? What about local?
Mitt Romney's not getting anybody's vote in our year.
What about state rep and state senators and county commissioners and board county presidents and stuff like that? What about those?
We have a person, we have people that identify which politicians are pro-union, and that's the direction we go in because we pay attention to the laws that they pass. Anybody who supported this whole 75% strike authorization vote bill that went through SB7, they don't get our vote. We don't deal with them because they are pro Rom's agenda. So
you got a lot of aldermen that went that route too, though. Now,
pardon?
Yeah, some aldermen that went that route too now.
As well, these people who are coming, riding in on the horse at the last minute, trying to give us a letter saying don't go on strike. Where were you the whole year? Where were you the whole year?
Don't just sit and just say that out front. I got 10 minutes. Yeah, commercial tomorrow and name the names and listen, name these names, these people who voted for the strike authorization. Y'all gotta listen to the names? Y'all listen to the names? Don't be scared now. Matter of fact, let me take a moment of silence and healing for the people of 9/11. Just one second, everybody.
Good evening. Today our fellow citizens, our way of life, our very freedom came under attack in a series of deliberate and deadly terrorist acts. The victims were in airplanes or in their offices, secretaries, businessmen and women, military and federal workers, moms and dads, friends and neighbors. Thousands of lives were suddenly ended by evil, despicable acts of terror. The pictures of airplanes flying into buildings, fires burning, huge structures collapsing, have filled us with disbelief, terrible sadness, and a quiet, unyielding anger. These acts of mass murder were intended to frighten our nation into chaos and retreat. But they have failed. Our country is strong. A great people has been moved to defend a great nation. Terrorist attacks can shake the foundations of our biggest buildings, but they cannot touch the foundation of America. These acts shatter steel, but they cannot dent the steel of American resolve. America was targeted for attack because we're the brightest beacon for freedom and opportunity in the world, and no one will keep that light from shining. Today, our nation saw evil, the very worst of human nature, and we responded with the best of America, with the daring of our rescue workers, with the caring for strangers and neighbors who came to give blood and help in any way they could. Immediately following the first attack, I implemented our government's emergency response plans. Our military is powerful, and it's prepared. Our emergency teams are working in New York City and Washington, D.C. to help with local rescue efforts. Our first priority is to get help to those who have been injured and to take every precaution to protect our citizens at home and around the world from further attacks. The functions of our government continue without interruption. Federal agencies in Washington, which had to be evacuated today, are reopening for essential personnel tonight and will be open for business tomorrow. Our financial institutions remain strong, and the American economy will be open for business as well. The search is underway for those who are behind these evil acts. I've directed the full resources of our intelligence and law enforcement communities to find those responsible and to bring them to justice. We will make no distinction between the terrorists who committed these acts and those who harbor them. I appreciate so very much the members of Congress who have joined me in strongly condemning these attacks. And on behalf of the American people, I thank the many world leaders who have called to offer their condolences and assistance. America and our friends and allies join with all those who want peace and security in the world, and we stand together to win the war against terrorism. Tonight I ask for your prayers for all those who grieve, for the children whose worlds have been shattered, for all whose sense of safety and security has been threatened. And I pray they will be comforted by a power greater than any of us, spoken through the ages in Psalm 23. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me. This is a day when all Americans from every walk of life unite in our resolve for justice and peace. America has stood down enemies before, and we will do so this time. None of us will ever forget this day, yet we go forward to defend freedom and all that is good and just in our world. Thank you. Good night, and God bless America.
All right, that was my little 911 breath. Now, Lisa, Fina, are you going to be able to bring a list of names, the name of all those who voted on behalf of that 75% authorization strike out for our people?
Yeah, I'll do research and get that.
People need to know their names and see where everybody stands at, you know, like that. I'm coming up to my last little shout out. Anything you want to say to my people while I have the last little minutes I got left on my show, Dom? You know?
Well, I just want to say the Bush recording you just played, that was the best that I have ever heard him read from that teleprompter.
Well, let's come together, and you know, it was a come together moment, a sombering moment. Even George Bush felt the gravity of that moment. You know, anything you want to say, Dana?
Well, when Athena first spoke, I had to go, ooh, like I had been hit in the gut. As always, it was a pleasure. I enjoyed all the insights you gave us, Athena. Jimmy, of course, I enjoyed the hot topic.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed Bianchi's input without being jumped on. My goodness, that's a day to remember. And I'm looking forward to talking to you again.
Likewise,
sis. All right, we'll be on again tomorrow, and maybe if you can bring us those names of those politicians that voted behalf of those, even the aldermen who saw the letters that said on strike. You know, just start naming names. 9 days,
I agree.
On the corner. Hold on to me, let's start naming names. Put you on the blue room back in.
When I was in school, you know, we used to sing something like this. Oh, beautiful, broad, spacious skies, far amber waves of grace. Magic.
tears.
Jimmy Lee's Underground Radio Network, 347-839-825. Tomorrow we're going to try to continue to talk about the school system. I guess I'll talk to you tomorrow, Dana, and thank you for being on my air, Fina, and thanks for being smooth, Pianki. Anything you want to say, Dana, if I let you go?
Hey, Jimmy, and I love this song by Ray Charles. Thank you so much, and God bless America.
I'll put you back on and let you ride it out there. Jimmy Lee, good night. May God be with you, everybody.
Save it, brotherhood, from sea to shining sea. America, ooh, I love you, America, because
good night, and may your God be with you.